Hello, wayward ships. The wind today carries the scent of sunscreen and cedar. The tide is warm and lazy, and the gulls have gossip. Somewhere inland, a bonfire is being kindled. The lighthouse lamp is lit. And maybe, just maybe, this letter will reach you like a shell tucked into your pocket. Small, but echoing the whole sea. Recently, I went camping, and it was maybe the most luxurious camping experience I've had in a very long time. When I was younger, I went to a Canadian summer camp, and I was able to join what we called canoe tripping. And canoe tripping was a separate excursion that you could book as part of this sleepaway summer camp where you would get in a canoe. You would have dry sacks full of your stuff, your sleeping bag, your clothes, your toothbrush, maybe one book. And then a wanigan, which is a really big barrel full of food. And you'd canoe, and you would portage, which is hiking your canoe across land to get to another body of water. And it's supposed to build character and be really fun. However, I am a magnet for mosquitoes. If I'm ever with you in person and you don't want to get bitten, just put me in front of you or around you. I promise you will not need bug spray. I will need medical attention, but you will be just fine. For some reason, mosquitoes really like my blood and I'm very tasty to them, especially if I've had a glass of red wine. That does something. I mean, red wine does something to me anyway, but it does something to me for the bugs. And, camping is just, ever since then, not really been something that I've particularly looked forward to, because no sleeping pads, no sort of creature comforts, your pillow was actually just your pillowcase full of dirty clothes, and that was what I slept on. And sleeping on the bare ground on a sleeping bag with twigs and rocks under your back is just not a fun time. Even if you're young, that memory stays with you. And you know what? Yes, I might have been a little bit pampered. I might have come from the land of always having a mattress to sleep on. But even then, I'd slept on floors at sleepovers. And you know what? Hardwood floor was more comfortable than the ground that which we set up camp. And I still remember that. So going on a camping trip as an adult, I'm always a little bit trepidatious, because most of the time when I've been camping as an adult, I feel the need and desire to take care of everybody else when I'm there, just because I have experience in camping. However, I was able to just not do that this time, and it was so nice to not have to worry about everything and everybody else. And I went to an incredible, beautiful place, a natural hot spring. I have never been to one of those. I mean, I've been to onsens in Japan. I've been to, touristy hot springs. But this one was really like a geothermal pool type of thing. It was so cool. And the first time that we visited these hot springs, it was at night. And we'd just driven, 4 hours to get in there, set up a pretty basic camp, and then moseyed down to the hot springs. And I was greeted with the most beautiful, sometimes a sight just takes your breath away, and it doesn't have to be anything big and expansive. It doesn't have to be a sweeping mountain view. Sometimes it could just be little warm tea lights, that warm amber glow where you can barely make out the shapes of some people, and gentle steam rising up above the water, the sound of a river rapid, and above you, a blanket of night sky stars. Oof, I was gobsmacked. That was one of the moments that I had where my breath caught, and I had a is this real life moment, because I could not fathom how I'd managed to get there, of being in such a beautiful place, experiencing this wonderful thing. And I was just so overwhelmed with gratitude. I had a moment, capital M, and it just was incredible. There was no service. I love unplugging from my phone. I am a staunch, opposer of large group chats, because it feels like I need to get to everything, and often I don't. actually, there's no obligation to respond to every single thing in a group chat. Crazy, right? But I have my phone set to do not disturb or like silent most of the time. And when people need to reach me, they have been able to reach me. It's never been a huge issue. So, and having no phones, and it literally felt like I was sleeping inside of a galaxy, like burritoed in between the stars. And I remembered how nice it was to just be so ridiculously present and feel the warm water and the sandy bottoms, you know, and hear the sound of the rapids and the sky twinkling overhead, and just feeling my whole body relax into this natural hot spring. If you've never been to one, I highly recommend it, but it just resets your whole body. It puts you back in your own skin, you know what I mean? I think a lot of the days that we pass are fairly dissociated, fairly so, because there's a lot of stimulus coming at you, and so it's understandable that you might just be autopiloting because there's too much to process. However, coming home to your body is a really, really excellent feeling, and it's so nice, and I felt like something inside of me had realigned, because it's been a journey of sort of coming home to myself and my own body, and as I've spoken before about the nature of becoming and becoming more me every day, and that being a lifelong journey, I really do feel much more settled in my bones, and asking myself the right questions at the beginning of every day to help guide me, like it all falls into place much more easily and readily when you're in your own body and when your bones are settled. So I invite you, whatever your practice is, whether it's some gentle movement or heading to a hot spring or just sitting in a bath or just lying on the floor with your hand on your chest and your heart, whatever makes you feel like you're coming home, eating a really good meal, you know, I don't have all the answers, but you actually do. So explore that. I encourage you to just do one small ritual that brings you home a little bit. And this lighthouse keeper will be there. Lantern at the ready to welcome you back. That camp trip, I swear, added like 4 years to my life. And one of my companions was a dog. It doesn't get much better than that. Listen, life is beautiful. Life is worth living. Moving on to part two of my podcast episode today, I wanted to talk about a recent development that I'm very excited about, which was on my bingo board, which is to finish the space play. I have been working on a play for a couple of months now, and the idea has been percolating forever, as an idea tends to do, but it is a play about space. I don't want to give too much away, because maybe one day I'll read it or talk about it on this podcast or use this podcast to direct you to the play, to maybe see it in real life if it is ever going to be put on. But it's a play that I've been working on for a while, and I finally had it in a stage where I thought it was maybe readable, and as I was writing it, I was like, oh, this dialogue's so good, you know, it's making me cry. And then I revisited it to, you know, give it one more pass before I sent it to my actors, and it was not hitting the same way, and so I was like, immediately got that artist's regret. I don't know, you know when you think that something's really good, and then you read it again, and you're like, what was I thinking? What was I on at the time? And so I went and I did another pass sort of frantically to try and tie some things together. And then when my actor friends came over, set the bar on the floor, and was pleasantly surprised by the fact that it actually was fine. It was actually more than fine. And it was really good, dare I say. It has legs. It needs work. But the readers that I brought in had a really fun time. There was laughter. There were tears, and it felt like the right step in my artistic journey of trying to be an actor in this crazy wild world. But just the fact that I created something that moves at least one person who wasn't me. And granted, I think she's biased. Charlie was here, really good friend of mine, and cried. But you know what? I'll take it. Because I don't think she would have done it just for my benefit. But it was about, loosely, the play is about, you know, two people, a woman who wakes up on a spaceship with no idea of how she got there, and these like cryptic messages that she keeps receiving, and the challenges of her trying to charge and not knowing anything and not being able to message back because of the capabilities of the energy stores. And she ends up, you know, talking to this person for a while, and it explores the themes of loneliness and grief and, you know, what it means to just keep reaching out, even if nobody is listening, even if you are afraid, even if your voice trembles, which I think is a very poignant message in the chapter of my life, at the very least. So I turned that into art somehow, and I'm just really proud hearing my friends lift those words off of the page and breathe life into something that I had worked, you know, really hard on, and getting that feedback that was equal parts, you know, helpful. Everyone was really nice and gentle, but also like, yeah, when I asked questions about pacing, and I had specific questions in mind about pacing and ordering and speaking as actors who were in the thick of it, like, did this character feel real and alive and interesting to you? And they came up with really great answers, and it all signs kind of pointed to me, pardon me, being on the right track. And I'm really, really proud, and it just cracked me open. My heart was so wide, and my artistic little soul was so happy. And so I'm really excited to keep working on it, and I feel like a renewed vigor and excitement to keep doing it, and that it could actually be done. Like, it could actually be put on and shared with a wider audience, and, you know, that idea is really, really exciting to me. And I was just thinking, like, you know, that this Lighthouse letter, to sort of go back to what I was talking about, that these little podcast episodes, these little tiny fragments out in the ether, are sort of the same thing, right? A little flare in the dark, and reaching out even if nobody's listening, and a reminder that we're still reaching, still wondering, and still very worthy of wonder and joy, and your capacity for that is not diminished by your suffering. Your capacity for joy is not diminished by your suffering. It's always there, and it's always been there, and sometimes it's just about coming home to it and reminding yourself that it is there. You know, that's a nice, nice thing, and maybe that's what big, beautiful things are. I'm trying to allow more big, beautiful things into my life, and not just tiny ones, because big, beautiful things feel scary and feel, you know, timeline-wise undeserved or unworthy. Like, I feel like I'm worthy of tiny, beautiful things, and I like recognizing the small joys because they matter. But the sweeping, broad, big ones, I'm still working my way towards accepting that I deserve big, beautiful things too. And I've had a couple of them enter my life recently, and I really just have not known what to do with them. I'm like, oh, this is so excellent and awesome and amazing and wonderful. Gosh, really just wonderful. And I'm like, what? What? How? And I think part of it is like a accepting that I do deserve big, beautiful things, and part of it is just being overwhelmed. Like, I don't know, imagine being bathed in just the best, most warm, rich everything. That's not a really good metaphor, is it? But I don't know, I was gonna say like being bathed in chocolate, but then you wouldn't be able to breathe because it's very dense. But you know, the idea of like being wrapped in golden silk and being not anointed, because I don't really want to delve into that territory, but like there is something quite deeply spiritual and holy, despite me not being a religious person, but just like a connectedness. And you know when you feel your absolute best, and or if you've ever experienced friction, which is sort of the body autonomous response to really good music, or art, you know, when you felt very, very alive and you're just awash with feelings of euphoria and contentedness and satiation of where you are, you're just like, this is good, capital G. Anyways, that feeling is what I feel when I feel, you know, big, beautiful things. And it is overwhelming because it's almost so entirely captivating, right? Like you're so here, you know, with big, beautiful things, whether it be a job promotion, whether it be, you know, expanding your community, whether it be an artistic win, whether it be meeting somebody new, like it just could be kind of any one of those things. And I've had a couple of like really big wins recently in my life, and I am like awash with all of these lovely feelings. And I think my dopamine system is like, that's a lot. It's a lot of good. We're not used to receiving so much good, especially after a period of very little of it. I don't know. My synaptic receptors are probably like, we need to make a few more of these because there's too much of this dopamine floating around, which I guess is not a bad thing, but I'm just trying to be aware of my own nervous system's ability to like experience all of that. And I don't want to overwhelm it. And I want to, you know, stay calm and grounded as well and reset my nervous system and have it be in homeostasis and be able to return to whatever that is. But you know, and if the bar is being raised even just a little bit, which I think is what's happening, I'm not gonna knock it. You know, I might fight it just a little bit, but I will make room for it because capacity for joy is not diminished by your suffering. See, I did come around back to the original point a little bit. But yeah, big beautiful things, I think maybe that's what they are. They're not perfect and not always easy, but they are worth showing up for. Like a story. Like a beautiful night under the stars, being so just full of love. Like the moment when someone looks at you after hearing your work and they say, that moved me. Or getting a text the next morning saying, that's my favorite thing of yours that you've ever written. Maybe that is what big, beautiful things are. Maybe they're worth showing up for. And now we're moving into the field note of today's episode. I have honestly so many. I met this massive dog the other day on a patio at a restaurant, at a local restaurant, and this dog was big, like poodly big, like half fluff, half dog, but standing up like two toddlers in a trench coat type of thing, like just massive. And he was so happy to just see everybody, 10 months old. He did that thing, one of my favorite things, when dogs wag their tails so hard their entire body shakes. Oof. So good. This typically only happens with small dogs because like they just don't have enough tail that they get to shake their whole butt. But this was a big dog, and he just visible excitement, visible readable excitement in the body language of a dog is just something that will never ever ever cease to make me smile and be just happy to be here. Because the fact that a dog can derive so much joy from meeting new people that it cannot contain its joy to just the tail and must then therefore move its entire body is a wonderful thing. It will never not be a wonderful thing. So that's one of my field notes. My second field note is summer's kiss. You know, summer's just around the corner. Summer is coming. By the time this comes out, summer will be in full swing. And I've been thinking a lot about summer's kiss, warm beaches, how we're older now, you know, 30 and suddenly aware of how loud young people's music is. I mean, I'm sorry, someone had to say it. It's bad. I'm so sorry in advance for all of, I guess retroactively, for all of the bad music I listened to very, very loudly, thinking I was very cool and having to be performatively cool. And yes, sometimes I still do that. I still am performatively like acting a certain way for whatever reason, but I don't know when I became crotchety, but I went to the beach on this one sparkling hot day in the middle of spring, and man, there were so many youths there. And listen, I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. We're all entitled to taking up space. You're all allowed to sort of do what you want respectfully, but I think, there should be a few rules, for sharing outdoor space, like just being considerate, having spatial awareness, and just like understanding that your music is really loud and you might be enjoying it, but there are other people around, and like, let's be cognizant, let's be aware, And maybe it's a reframe of not being crotchety and old, but rather of understanding that it's kind of what I was speaking about before. It's the reverence that comes with age, this quiet understanding and appreciation for just listening to the sound of the trees and the wind and the ocean waves, not just for the silence and soup dumplings and cozy days in bed by nine, but for space. Physical space, emotional space. And I watched a group of teenagers throw a football around, and also soccer ball, and also many other things, just like over other people's heads. And they hit a few people, myself included. And they apologized, but they weren't really that sorry. And I was like, you injured somebody. Like, let's not hurt each other in our pursuit of joy. How about that? You know what I mean? Like, and it just keeps happening. And I'm like, yeah, there's not a ton of space in this beach, but you could just go farther and do it. Like, how about we don't throw this thing around where there's lots of other people that you could potentially hit? And I thought, do they not see us? Are we invisible? Do they not feel the space they just shattered? But I guess if you frontal lobe is not developed yet, then maybe you don't have the spatial awareness capabilities to understand. And, can I fault them for that? Can I fault anybody for ignorance? Big question here. If it's not malicious, right? If they don't mean intentionally to cause anybody harm, where does intent actually matter versus the outcome of what's happened and the consequence? Does it excuse you from the consequence? Does your intention really matter here? Or is it about what actually happened? And that's, a topic for another A Lighthouse Letters episode of intent and consequence and conflict, because I think all of those three things are tied into one. I think intent does matter in terms of understanding, but if you've hurt somebody, then the consequences you hurt somebody doesn't matter what your intention was. And if you love them and care about them, it is something you should attempt to repair and fix and, put away your ego for half a second and understand that you hurt somebody. And then afterwards, you can try to come to a place of understanding of like, it's really not what I meant. I don't mean to excuse myself, but this is what my original intention was. And I don't know, I'm still kind of figuring that out personally of, does it hurt any less when you know the intention was not malicious, but just simply ignorant? And how much can you hold somebody accountable for their own ignorance and lack of self-awareness or education? Or in this case, their prefrontal lobe is not developed. I mean, that's not really their fault. They were born when they were born, And also, is it even worth being angry about that kind of thing? Probably not. So I say all this to just talk about spatial awareness. And I visited Costco last weekend and nobody has spatial awareness there. I lose my own spatial awareness there, but I do think, it's important to say, I see you, or I'll step aside, or, we're both allowed to take up space and we can both exist peacefully and respectfully in this space, symbiotically. And I wondered, when we sort of lost the ability to do that, are we just so overstimulated? Or is it that the bigger the city, the more the individual becomes an individual lost in a sea of other anonymous people? Where does the line of community and togetherness sort of blur? Do we owe each other anything? Many would say we don't. And I would say that maybe we do. We owe each other kindness and basic human respect. And you might not always get that back, but it doesn't mean you should stop trying. And it also doesn't mean that you should let yourself be taken advantage of either. I mean, it's a complicated dance, and probably another topic for a different Lighthouse Letters episode. But spatial awareness, I think, is a love language, and being mindful of each other and where each other are in space is just a really nice thing. As I'm, undergoing all these big, beautiful changes in my life and experiencing big, beautiful things, the more I feel like I'm able to confidently and safely take up space and advocate for what I need in a respectful way and talk about mutual understanding and, you know, even my professional life, like really meeting people where they're at and using very specific language to help make a point and wanting to learn that other person's language and really making an effort to try and understand. And realizing that that's always been something I've tried to do. And I think along the way, I kind of lost that understanding of myself. And really started to doubt if that was something I even was capable of. Like, oh, am I just somebody who, you know, bowls over other people's needs and wants in favor of my own? And, you know, was I not really trying at all to communicate with that person or this person or whatever? And, you know, especially particular in terms of my breakup, I kind of came away from that thinking I was like a terrible person for a lack of understanding, a lack of empathy, and just an inability to bend any more than I was already bending, and that somehow being a fault of my own making, you know what I mean? Like my selfishness. And realizing now, I'm like, you know, I was not a perfect person and I was definitely flawed. And there were certainly things that I could have improved on, places where I could have shown more grace and empathy and had enough confidence to, you know, either push back or just not, you know, put that burden on somebody else. And yet I do know almost with perfect certainty that I really tried with everything I had to be not just compliant, but bendable and adaptable. And I had an entire book where I would log the right ways to speak, and not the right ways to speak, but like the most understandable phrases, the best way to communicate. And I dug and dug and dug and explored and discovered and asked questions to try and figure out what the best way of communicating was. And, it took a lot out of me to do that. And now I'm realizing, like, actually, what I originally thought is a perfectly acceptable way to think, in that, you know, I think it's your own responsibility to know how you want to be communicated to. You know, for example, I might say, hey, my name's Allison, and my communication preference is really direct. Like, I don't want you to, you know, faff around with what you're trying to say. I'd rather you just tell me and say it right out the gate. And I prefer that, and I can take it. You know, I'm a big girl, and I won't take it the wrong way. Or, for example, it might be, you know, I'm feeling a bit tender-hearted these days, and I need a gentle, kind hand. Or at least if you're going to drop a bomb on me that's, you know, hard to hear, could you just preface it with, I'm about to say something that might be hard to hear. Do you have capacity for it? You know, a little line. I think it's everybody's own responsibility to figure out how they want to be communicated to. And then tell everybody else, you know, this is a guideline for talking to me, especially if it's different from the norm. Rather than just relying on other people to try and figure it out. Like, that's a lot to put on other people who cannot read your mind. Anyways, I digress. What a lovely, silly little tangent, you know? And, yeah, I guess I can move into my closing ritual on this little ramble of a lighthouse letter as the sun disappears behind the clouds and the gray sky rolls in, and it's time for this lighthouse keeper to tend to that flame. Here's what I'm learning. Sometimes side quests are the story, you know? The soup is the celebration. The silly candle that smells like baguette is the protest against a joyless world. These tiny, beautiful things are all small acts of rebellion. But the quiet moment under the blanket of stars, the success of a table read about two people trying to reach each other across an immeasurable distance and still feeling like they're together, the inexplicable feeling of something you know to be true but is not tangible, doesn't exist in the material plane, but is there and is raw and is real and is shimmering. Those are big, beautiful things. And you are allowed to want them. And yes, you may also have them. You're not selfish for that. And you're not a bad person for that. You are allowed. If you needed a permission slip, consider this one for you. You are allowed to want those big, beautiful things. And however you can whimsify your life, do it. I invite you to. Make it silly. Life is gonna be, you know, challenging, problematic, difficult, cynical, hopeless at many points. And I think one of the best acts of protest that you can do is to live a little silly, you know? Dilly dally. Get up to a shenanigan or two. Do a silly funny walk just because you can. Label your to-do list as side quests. Your main goal is a big adventure. Bingo board the goals that you have. Gamify your life. Do it, because the world will certainly not do it for you. So maybe you make your to-do list a little adventure scroll. Maybe you light a candle and say a silly incantation. Like, today I light this candle in honor of who I am and who I was and who I will be. Under the banner of stars and lighthouses and really, really good pasta. I know this to be true. Maybe you light a birthday candle just because you can. And it's not your birthday, but your existence is still worth celebrating. One day more is still one day more. You only get this day to be this old. Maybe you step aside in the aisle of a very busy grocery store, and someone notices, and you give each other that tight-lipped smile and that nod. And maybe their whole day is better because of it, because you made room for somebody, and you said, I see you. You know, maybe you let somebody merge today. Maybe somebody lets you merge. And maybe you guys do that thing where you put your hand up to say thank you. Maybe you thank the bus driver on your way out of the bus. Maybe the bus driver smiles at you. Who knows? So many things can happen. It's so exciting. You, my dear traveler in that wayward ship, you are the miracle. So, as always, as I sign off, sleep well, drink lots of water, and tell the people you love that you love them. The lamp is lit, and this lighthouse is always here. Good night.